The following podcast is part two of a three-part series entitled My Story by Catherine Campbell. For more information, please visit catherine-campbell.com.
So then on to our next question, is God fair? Ooh, that's a humdinger of a question, isn't it? And that's the one the theologians might debate over again and again, but I'm no theologian by any means. But we can look at the fact that Habakkuk struggles with the devastation that God reveals is coming to the nation. I love the book of Habakkuk because I kind of can see myself in it. You know, there have only been a few occasions, but there have been a couple of times when people have come to me, and maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking that already yourself, you know, and they've said that they were disappointed in me, that I should ever doubt or that I should ever question. But you know, this little book just brings me so much comfort because Habakkuk says to God, that's not fair. You can't do that. Read verse 12 and verse 13. This is Habakkuk's response when God tells him that the nation is going to be devastated. He says, are you not from everlasting? O Lord, my God, my Holy One, we shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. But you are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously, and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? A person more righteous than he. Habakkuk responds initially with confusion and even with anger. You can't send the Chaldeans, Lord, he says. You can't use these godless men to punish your people. You are a holy God. That's not fair, Lord. You can't do that. And he even goes on, as I read, to question the accuracy of God's message. We shall not die. And I see the mercy of God in allowing him to do that at that time. We're not going to die. This isn't going to happen, he says. It just didn't seem fair. And you know, ladies, as I stand before you, there are things that happen that can seem so unfair at times. Things that seem so unfair that there might even come into our mind that little doubt at the fairness of God. It's so easy to feel let down, especially if we only look at things from a human perspective. Let's face it, we see people starve in third world countries. We see babies abused, never, ever, once having known love. We see Christians tortured and martyred, more Christian martyrs in this past century than in all the previous centuries before. And we look at the unfairness of how they have to live. And then nearer home in our own families, we watch marriages split up. We see people hurt. We see friends die of cancer. We see people lose their jobs. We see people lose their pensions in this recession, working hard to save up, and then all of a sudden there's nothing there. And we look around, and humanly speaking, it all seems so pointless, so unfair. But I want to tell you, ladies, that there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger picture than all of this. There have been times when I have said, Lord, if only I could sit on your shoulder and have a wee peek down and just see where you've put me, to see what you're doing, to see if I can make any sense of all of this. But I think the little poem just puts it so well. It's not till the loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly will God unfurl the canvas and show the reason why the dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hands as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. On the 28th of July in 1985, our third child was born. We had another little girl, and because of something the doctor said 6 weeks before when I had my scan, he says, home in a boat, Mrs. Campbell, nothing wrong with this baby, this one's perfect, he said. This one's perfect. And so when this little girl was born, my husband named her again, and he said, we can't call her anything else but Joy. There is no other name for this child. Because of the joy that she has brought into our lives, that God has given us a perfect child. Cheryl was now 6 years old, and she also had a little brother who was 3 and a half, a healthy, well boy who was an absolute delight, and as a young man is still an absolute delight in our lives. And so Joy came along. Nothing wrong with this baby. This one's perfect, he had said. But just 6 weeks later, I sat in front of the paediatrician who was now caring for both of the girls, and with tears in her eyes, she said to me, "I'm so sorry, but Joy too has microcephaly like her sister. Her brain has stopped growing." Only, ladies, this time I knew what to expect. This time I knew that after watching Cheryl for 6 years, I knew that this time that this little one in my arms would never walk, that she would never talk, that she'd never be able to hold her own head up, that she would never be able to hold a toy in her hand unless you put her fingers around it, that she would never call my name, that she would never put her arm around my neck and pull me over and give me a kiss on the cheek the way that we were experiencing with Paul. This time I knew exactly what to expect. And I can honestly say there was only one thing that I said to God: "That's not fair. That's not fair, Lord. You can't do this to me again. Have I not learnt enough?" And if any of you have read the book or you take the book, you will see the different ways in which for those 6 years, God took me to places with himself that I had never dreamt possible. It was just amazing the things that he had taught me, the things that I had learnt from his word. And really, to be perfectly honest, I kind of had this notion that I'd learnt enough. You know, I really didn't need to learn anymore, because I had learnt after reading Psalm 139 that Cheryl was no freak of nature, that she was no mistake of bunched up genetic mistake, but rather that she was made by God, as each one of us are, made by God to glorify him. And so at that time, inside, I just died a little. Went to church, I did all the things that I had to do. I mean, my husband was a preacher. You have to put a smile on when somebody says to you, "How are you?" And sometimes we lie through those words. "How are you?" "Oh, I'm fine, thank you." And inside, you're falling apart. But God knows, and God sees. And I was just devastated, and I just wanted the world to pass me by. But remember what I had learned. Remember that I had learned 6 years before and every day since then that God is a God who always keeps his promises. He cannot lie. You maybe said to somebody last week when you were going out of church, "I'll give you a wee ring during the week," and before you know it, the week's gone and you haven't managed to get round it. Or maybe you said you would call and see wee Mrs. So-and-so, perhaps, whose husband died, and you would call round and you just haven't managed to make it yet. And we don't do that intentionally. But promises can sometimes slip by the wayside, but God's promises can't, because he cannot lie. And 6 years before, he had said to me, "Catherine, there are waters of difficulty. There are rivers of disappointment. There's going to be fire of suffering licking at your heels, but I'm going to be with you." And I had learned that 6 years before. And you know, at that time, I also, one of the things that I had learned through all of that was that God is a speaking God, and the way that he chooses to speak is through his word. And so we shouldn't neglect his word. But you know what it's like if you're feeling very down, or you're feeling that life is dealing you a hard blow, then it's very difficult to study. It's very difficult to read. And so at that time, and it was also one of the reasons why I put the little book together, at that time I was using a daily reading book. And this daily reading book, as you can see, is really old, although I think they're reprinting them again, by Mrs. Charles E. Cowman, called Streams in the Desert. And every day I just says, "God, speak to me, because I know you've got something to say about all of this, and I'm just disappointed." And this is what God said to me. And by the date at the top of the page, I can tell you it was probably about 5 weeks or so after we were told that Joy, too, was handicapped. The verse at the top of the page is also very well known, and it says, from 1 Peter, it says that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, though it is tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honour and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. "What makes this set of china so much more expensive than that?" asked the customer. "It has more work on it. It has been put through the fire twice. See, in this one the flowers are in a yellow band, in that one they are on the white background. This had to be put through the fire a second time to get the design on it. Why is the pattern on this vessel so blurred and marred, the design not brought out clearly? That one was not burned enough. Had it remained in the furnace longer, the dark background would have become gold, dazzling gold, and the pattern would have stood out clear and distinct. Perhaps some of us are like the costly china being doubly tried in the fire, that we may be more valuable in the Master's service. And the little sentence at the end of the reading just says this: don't rebel at the second breath of the flame if he sends it. Don't rebel at the second breath of the flame if he sends it. And you know, as I read through it, I just thought how merciful God is. There are times when he speaks to us, perhaps in ways that appear a little obscure, and then there are other times when you think he was just sitting beside you, and so he just says, you know what? You've been put through the fire twice. And it's as clear and as obvious as that. If you seek him, you will find him, and he will speak to you. And that day, in his mercy, God reminded me he had a bigger plan. And one day the pieces would all fit together. In the meantime, he said to me so clearly, Catherine, can you trust me with the things that you don't understand? Can you trust me with the things that you don't understand? And I will make something beautiful of your life through your life. You see, ladies, faith is a word that is bandied about today. You could go out there into that field and you could hug a tree and you could be said to have faith. And it's easy to say that you have faith when everything in the garden's rosy and your little lake is a mill pond. But when your tsunami hits, it's a different matter. And there are times when God says, step out with me into the darkness, and underneath you'll find the rock. And that rock is Jesus. Trust him when you don't understand. That's what faith really is. You see, ladies, this isn't a matter of fair. We're asking the wrong question here. To determine whether something is fair or not, we need to see both sides of the picture. And it's rarely possible for us to see things from God's perspective. That makes this not a question of fairness. God asks us to trust him with the big question, with the big picture, and that makes this a question of trust, not a question of fairness. He says, can you trust me with the things that you don't understand? Let me explain it to you this way. I think you'll understand it only too well. I've mentioned Paul, and he reached his teenage years, and, you know, he was, you know, friend told me that, he's a good boy now, but you see, when he becomes a teenager, he'll go upstairs one day, and the next morning he'll come down a monster. But thankfully, he didn't become a teenage monster. But you know what it's like? They try their wings a wee bit. Well, I mean, they're growing up. That's part of it. And so one day he was going out, and he got to the door, and he put his hand on the door, and he looked back, and he says, bye, Mum. And I said, bye, Paul. Be back by 10 o'clock. And he said, that's not fair, Mum. David's allowed to stay out until 11, and John's got a key. He can come in whenever he wants. That's not fair. Now, from where he was standing as a teenager, that wasn't fair. But across the room from where I was standing as a loving parent, who knew the difficulties that lurked in our streets at night for teenagers, who knew those who would try to waylay them and try to cause problems in their life, wasn't a question of fair. It was a question of right. And I only ever acted out of love towards him. And he went out that night and he shut the door. And you know, when he shut the door behind him and he wasn't very happy, and God said to me, Catherine, you see, the next time you feel like putting your fist up and saying, God, that's not fair, I just want you to picture across the room your Heavenly Father. And I just want you to picture me as the one who sees a bigger picture. One who sees where I've placed you, not only for your good, but for the good of others. And I just want you to know that standing across the room is the one who only ever acts out of love and on your behalf. And so we see, ladies, that it's not a question of fair. It's a question of, can God be trusted? And I say a resounding yes, God can be trusted even with the things that we don't understand.